My name is John Shipton. I'm Julian Assange's father. I'm on a tour of the continent of Europe and the United States and Australia to build a coalition of support for Julian to bring him into the, well, they call it a prosecution, the persecution of Julian, which has now entered. I think on Palm Sunday it'll enter its 14th year.
I've just been looking at this air crash over in China yesterday, which is a China Eastern 737 that at cruise altitude, it looked like the crew was struggling with it, and then suddenly there was a power dive, which is a very strange thing for any aircraft to do. The only thing is, of course, we had two similar crashes. Now, I know in Vault 7, Julian actually published quite a lot of information about the capabilities to hack, and I just wonder, I mean, this Vault 7 does seem to be incredibly damning, John, whether this is one of the things which has really made the United States decide to shut Julian down.
It's said amongst the aficionados of Julian's case, the people who follow it very closely, that Vault 7 stimulated the CIA to persecute Julian and actually caused Mike Pompeo on the 17th of April 2017 to launch the CIA into the spying of Julian and to the suborning of the UC Global, which was the security company in charge of the Ecuadorian embassy at the time, to spy on Julian 24 hours a day. That Vault 7 is so vital to the CIA and the use of, for example, it was enabled, one of the attributes of Vault 7 enabled the CIA to hack into another institution's computer and leave evidence of a third party having done the hack. So this means that every single attribution of a cyber attack can be, or is likely to be, falsified.
I think the most amazing thing was that the manuals for these hacking tools were published, and a lot of the development had been done by the secret services, mainly obviously by the signals intelligence people, and yet they were then made available to selected commercial outlets so that they could use them themselves for industrial espionage and possibly even assassination, John.
Yeah, yes, it's been a catastrophe for, well, all around. That once these creatures escape their confines, I call them creatures, but these techniques escape their confines, they are able to be used for any purpose whatsoever by anybody anybody that so understands the techniques. It's quite a disaster, really, for everybody.
Okay, what about the court case in London, though, for your son? Because I understand that he's now been refused the right to appeal to the Supreme Court, although, of course, this is a supremely important case. The Supreme Court is something that Britain brought in about 10 or 12 years ago, almost in mimicry of the United States Supreme Court. We never had something like that before. Our final court of appeal used to be the House of Lords. Anyway, what do you make of this? Is this the end of the line for the court case? How's it going to go from here, do you think?
Well, there's a couple of things, Tony, and what, you know, a couple of answers to expand upon in your question. First one up is that now Julian has appeared before 21 judges, most of those judges from superior courts. So this gives you some idea of the antipathy of the judiciary to Julian Assange, that every sort of contortion of due process. And due process requires the equal arming of either side in the defence and the prosecution when Julian's case simply hasn't happened. The next part of the question is that now it goes to the defence to make an appeal to the High Court on the judgment of Judge Baraita back in January last year. So that appeal will be considered by the High Court and either agreed to or declined. I imagine it will be declined because the defence's appeal is against all aspects of Baraita's judgment, excepting the health judgment. So every single aspect, for example, that the treaty obligations between the United States and the United Kingdom, that any extradition for a political purpose or a political reason can't be done. Well, of course, Julian's case, you could say that that was a political act of the publishers of WikiLeaks. The next one is that we take into account, this is really very important, public interest. So the public interest was ruled against by Judge Baraita in the Magistrates Court. Now, this is really an important concern of the polity of the United Kingdom, that any public interest publication can be attacked by the United States or another state, and the journalist, such as yourself, can be arraigned and extradited to the complaining state. It's a catastrophe. There are, of course, quite a number of other areas to look at. For example, the Espionage Act of the United States in 1917 that was used to attack Julian. The computer intrusion charge brought about by the testimony of an Icelandic person who has since recanted their testimony and made further testimony that the FBI had promised him freedom from prosecution, immunity from prosecution, and was also a convicted fraudster and a convicted paedophile. So it's not the sort of witness that has any credibility, and yet Judge Baraita, in her unwisdom, ruled that she would accept that evidence. So there's three areas that are a profound concern to the administration of law and justice in the United Kingdom.
But looking at the wider picture, things are very much hotting up, particularly in Eastern Europe, John, between the East and West. It's almost like a new Cold War. I wonder whether you think Julian's case fits in with this.
I don't, you know, the publications from COVID onwards of the mass media, COVID onwards to right now, have a homogeneity of opinion which blends entirely with the government's attitude. Now, this is not a healthy circumstance for a democracy and not a healthy circumstance for mothers and fathers to make up, to gain knowledge, to make decisions for their children and family. In fact, it's the opposite of healthy. And you'll see that all of a sudden, COVID disappeared entirely. And then it's in the consciousness of the nation is overtaken completely by a new concern. So there's a fundamental universal concern, a pandemic. Everybody's very worried about the well-being of their mothers and fathers and children and themselves. then 1 week later it's gone completely and everybody's subsumed. Their consciousness is subsumed in a vigor to embark upon warfare. This is not really very healthy, and we must, of course, make every effort to bring back a critical application news, not a not submitting to. Well, I don't quite know how to express it, but submitting universally to whatever the government wants, because all newspapers line up behind what the government so decides to do at the time, particularly when it's war or particularly when it's a pandemic.
Yes, that's certainly true, and we can see it here, almost like in lockstep with each other. Look, you're an Australian, Julian's Australian. I mean, how is Australia taking this? I would have thought that, you know, that it would be kicking off against the old colonial power, doing the absolutely appalling, you know, completely unjust treatment of one of their own.
Oh, God's sake. You know, the acquiescence is complicity. You know, they haven't made Buddha a goose, the Australian government. However, the Australian polity and 30 members of the Australian Parliament, I think there's 270 members in the Australian Parliament, 30 members, including the Deputy Prime Minister, are in the Assange group. And one of the great charms of parliamentary democracy or representative democracy is that the parliamentarian brings into the majesty of parliament, the sovereign majesty of parliament, the concerns of their constituency and insists that the executive act upon those concerns. This, of course, has declined over the years as the sovereign majesty of parliament is the envy of many institutions. But in the case of Julian Assange, it faces renewal, because the concerns of those parliamentarians and those constituencies that the parliamentarians represent are cross-party. They have nothing to do with party affiliation and entirely are concerned with the prosecution and oppression of citizen Julian Assange. So I think that that's a heartening circumstance in a bleak, a generally bleak landscape.
Well, there's something very, very medieval about the way that Julian has been incarcerated, almost like Henry VIII throwing someone into the dungeon. How is he, John?
Not the best. Not the best, but, you know, when you, I just use this analogy, when you throw out the compost and make mulch, you'll see occasionally a seed break through and a flower to grow in the compost, or you know, some new fresh growth. Well, in the case of Julian Assange and Stella, his fiancée and bride-to-be, tomorrow in Belmarsh, Julian will marry. Julian and Stella will marry at 2 p.m. in the confines of Belmarsh. This is a Belmarsh maximum security prison for terrorists and murderers. And within that, despite that circumstance, love has grown, and there are two beautiful children from that liaison. So, and that will be celebrated despite the oppression that the United Kingdom's justice system and the Crown Prosecuting Services smearing and, you know, contortion of due process. So something new, fresh and loving will be celebrated tomorrow within the confines of a terrorist jail.
Are these decisions actually being made in London, or do you think this is something just, as many people have said, from the United States?
Tony, yeah, that's, I mean, for years we've all thought that, you know, the United Kingdom is acting proxy for the United States. But the other day I came across the Nuremberg Code, and I think it was Article 6, or I'm not sure on the article number, but it states explicitly that if you committed a crime, you can't say somebody else told me to do it and thereby be excused. The persecution of Julian Assange falls upon the shoulders, the responsibility falls upon, squarely upon the shoulders of the United Kingdom judiciary and the Crown Prosecuting Service. Whether or not the United States is involved is not significant to the contortions of due process and the irregularities of disobeying or ignoring the conventions of asylum and dragging Julian out of the Ecuadorian embassy when he's an asylee. If I could remind your listeners that an asylee, being an asylee, is a process which you go through, lifting you above the laws of the nation that you are in, particularly in the circumstances of the United Kingdom, particularly as the United Kingdom is one of the authors and a signatory to the Conventions of Asylum. So we face this circumstance where the great, or the magnificent, actually, the magnificent civil artifacts that came into being in the mid-20th century after the catastrophe of the Second World War, the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Conventions of Asylum, the Geneva Conventions, every single one of them abrogated in the case of Julian Assange. And that abrogation will continue unless we, for other people, it'll continue for other people unless we, the members of the public and the members of the constituents of parliamentarians, object. And so it's pursuant upon us to bring renewal to the administration of law in the United Kingdom and Australia.
Okay, so I understand you're coming to London. If people want to see you, John, where can they come?
Where? Well, all of us will be dressed up with our finery for Julian and Stella's wedding outside of Belmarsh, the maximum security prison, tomorrow at 2 o'clock. So the wedding is on at 2. And I guess it's only 15 minutes. They're pretty mean, these people. They only allow 15 minutes after 15 minutes. And so I guess we'll be out at 2:30.
What about campaigns in the UK particularly? Whereabouts can people find those?
DEA, don't extradite Assange.org, DEA. They're the campaign headquarters for Julian Assange. Myself and Gabrielle, Julian's brother, we go back to Australia on the 29th because we had an election in Australia and we built up a bit of a war chest and a bit of a following. So we're going to do our utmost to cause the Australian government. It's interesting in Australia, it's strategically vital. It has every resource, food and iron ore, bauxite, you know, gas, energy. It has every resource. It's strategically vital, but it's politically feeble. So we will attack, maybe that's the wrong word, but we will do our utmost to push Australia into the circumstance where it realises politically some of its strategic vitality and defends the citizen Julian Assange. That's our job.
John Shipton, thanks very much for joining us.
Tony, always a pleasure to speak to you. I hope to catch up to you for another delightful afternoon tea and lunch. Yeah, that'd be great.